This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167.
Hello and welcome to The Feed with Amber Mack.
And Michael B. for everything new now and next.
We have you covered for what's happening in the world of technology and what's trending online.
On the show, we tell you where Samsung plans to open up 80,000 jobs. Also on the show, we feature the latest in smart homes, smart thermostats.
And we debate if Meta can keep up with social media giant TikTok.
That's all coming up right here on The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B.
Trending up.
TikTok. What's going on, Miss Amber Mack? How are you this week?
I am doing well. I am in kind of a busy period like many of us, but I feel as though summer is on the horizon. You know, you get that feeling as we inch towards June that people are trying to get as much work done as possible. So maybe in July or August, things can kind of slow down a little bit.
They can take a little time off because summer's in the air. Well, in Australia, it's actually starting to feel a little like winter. Not like the winter I'm used to, but winter nevertheless. And it's really funny because people start to talk about the cold and how cold it is. And I have to keep it to myself that this is not cold in any way, shape, or form.
That's when you know where you're in, right? That's basically the litmus test that if you can bite your tongue, then maybe you're not full Canadian yet. But otherwise, you'd be like, in Canada, every day in the winter, it's minus 20.
In my head, I'm like, minus 20. It's like, that's cold. And then like, oh, there's a chill in the air. It's getting quite cold. You know, it's like 10 degrees. And I'm like, that's a warm summer day for us. But, it's still quite nice outside. So I have a light sweater on at the moment. All right, let's get right to it. What are people talking about?
Well, we have some news from Samsung. This is a big announcement that they plan, according to CNN Business, to create 80,000 new jobs with about a $356 billion investment. Now, most of these jobs will be in South Korea. That is where they plan to see the majority of the growth, but they also expect to see some opportunities in terms of research and development, some of this investment going into the United States, United Kingdom, Canada, and the Philippines. So if you are curious about how Samsung continues to grow in the future, then this is a great read to better understand why they are putting this much funding aside and why they're moving to create this number of jobs in the future. And it's a pretty significant goal.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable, just the sheer size, as you mentioned. What I found interesting was the references to them beefing up the development of 6G. Now, why I found that quite interesting was that there's lots of places that still don't have 5G, the infrastructure, and all of the news that we read and see around 5G. And, you know, most of these companies, you know, are heavily spending for 6G now. So it is, I do find it quite interesting, the time it takes for, you know, the masses to catch up to technology still, even though we've seen, you know, that gap close, it's still there, and it's still large, in my opinion anyway.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's also fascinating to think about the next 5 to 10 years and what's going to happen with the technology industry in general, because there is this momentum, I think, that we're all feeling right now, which is many places are starting to return to whatever the new normal is. And it also feels like there's kind of a rush to kind of catch up in terms of where we've come from. So it'll be fascinating to watch some of these big tech players really evolve and innovate over the coming years, again, recognizing that we've gone through such a period of total disruption.
Absolutely. And speaking of companies that are innovating, Dyson, which of course a lot of people would know from their vacuum cleaners, well, they're actually placing a big bet on producing robots that are actually capable of household chores. And they've got this goal to develop and implement these robots into the households by 2030. So maybe the Jetsons isn't far off and we all will get our own little Rosie.
I know it's always that promise, right, of robots coming into our lives and making our lives easier. And one of the things I've been thinking a lot about in terms of machines and technology like machine learning or artificial intelligence is the role of voice in the home. And I was watching a great report recently talking about how voice, even though it's something we kind of take for granted today in terms of interacting with machines, how that in some ways is really one of the most exciting and innovative technologies to spring out of the pandemic in terms of widespread use. So I find it fascinating, no matter what the machine, the body kind of looks like, you know, it could be a smart speaker or a robot, really at the end of the day, how we're interacting with a lot of these robots and machines or speakers or whatever they might be is through voice technology. So I can't wait for it just to get better and better at understanding, you know, a larger group of people, accents, you know, the list goes on and on. So I think we're going to keep an eye on that. And actually, Michael, because I like to suggest guests on the show, I follow a blog called voicebot.ai, and they have some really great research there. So we should try to grab someone from there.
Oh, so I thought you were going to say, and we should have a voice bot on the show. And I'm like, actually, that would be really cool. Yes, we should have a real person guest from there. But now I'm actually fascinated to see if we could book a voice bot. I don't know how that would work.
Be amazing. I could just talk to a smart speaker for a whole segment.
That's fair. Just to see what happens.
Same. Different body.
Yeah. Well, our last story, just thought we'd add this in just because it's an old school player in a new space.
Yeah. So according to TechCrunch, Starliner has returned to Earth after a successful first trip to the ISS. And this spacecraft is a Boeing spacecraft. So you, of course, would know Boeing from flying on many of their commercial aircraft. But you might not have known that they were also in the space business. So this is an example of one of the spacecraft's first successful orbital missions. And it looks like there was a few sort of, you know, trips along the way, but generally speaking, it had a successful mission. And we're always trying to keep up to date with what's happening in terms of space exploration.
Absolutely. And of course, this is really good news for Boeing. So if it can convince NASA that it's got it all sorted and it can work really well, you know, it's one of the serious contenders to keep doing work and replacing some of the alternatives that they've used in the past when, of course, the U.S. looked elsewhere to get things into space. Well, stay with us. Of course, we've got a whole lot more on the show. When we return, we dive into the future of smart ag tech.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. In the spotlight.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Now, the global smart agriculture market size is expected to triple by 2025, with so many IoT and digital technologies coming online to help improve the future of food production. The risk of a cyber attack to the supply chain increases exponentially. To help understand how vulnerable food supply chains are, Benjamin Turner, Chief Operating Officer of Agrimetrics, is joining us now. Benjamin, when you see all of the headlines currently, it can be quite scary. So I guess, you know, just how worried should we be?
Thank you very much, Michael. Yeah, it can be scary. We've got to get the balance right, I think, between judging how we kind of wake the industry up to understanding what the issues are and making sure that senior leaders in government, in business, really do kind of take this seriously in a way that means that organizations can really thrive in an era where data, technology, analytics are absolutely essential for us if we're going to meet the food needs of the future, the food security needs of the future. So, you know, there's no question that we've got to adopt technology, and the industry is absolutely doing that at some pace. You know, the exponential growth of technology in the form of robotics, AI and analytics, cloud, sensors and Internet of Things devices means that precision agriculture is the future, but that brings with it risks and threats in terms of the kind of inherent vulnerabilities that come with using such technologies. And I think at the moment, many participants in this sector, in the agriculture and agri-food sector, just seem to have a bit of a false sense of security. They maybe don't really understand that there's a lot of data in this sector, a lot of key critical pinch points in this sector that can cause instability or that can give cyber criminals a hook to be able to exploit and cause pain and therefore get financial benefit in terms of ransomware or selling data. And so I think it's something that we've got to wake up to, and we should be concerned about this. Maybe scary is too strong a word, but certainly there are scenarios that you can imagine happening, and that actually there are already parallels of that have happened in other sectors that could paint a really dire picture of what could happen if something goes badly wrong in the agri-food and agriculture sector. We all eat. We will all be impacted if something major happens.
So one of the things that you said in a BBC report is that you think that food and farming should be considered critical infrastructure. Can you talk a little bit about the difference that this could potentially make?
Thank you, Amber. Yes. Certainly here in the UK, we talk about critical national infrastructure. And at the moment, we don't have certain assets of the agri-food and the agriculture sector. We don't have certain assets kind of bound up in that language of what it means to be considered by government and therefore by the industry as critical national infrastructure. In other sectors like the energy industry, a nuclear power plant is obviously critical national infrastructure. And there are relatively few of those. You can look at them, you can protect them very directly. This sector is very, very fragmented. That in itself builds a lot of resilience to cope with shocks across the sector. However, there are pinch points within the sector. There are certain capabilities, maybe some government capabilities where there are perhaps data stored around food safety, around tracking animal welfare and animal disease spread, or organizations, private organizations that are maybe pinch points in the sector in terms of being kind of the consolidated grain millers or oilseed crushers. There are only a few of those. And these organizations being pinch points in these sectors can be really important to protect, to identify and protect, to make sure that whole long supply chains cannot be disrupted.
And so how do you go about ensuring those examples that you just gave are protected?
Thanks. I think government's got to lead by example. There's a need to educate the sector and really create awareness across growers, across organizations, across equipment manufacturers. The point about the increasing technology use across the industry is that a lot of the data, a lot of the equipment that that manufacturers are putting into the marketplace, very, very data driven. Where do those data go? Where do they sit? How do they drive processes? So we've got to really help these organizations understand their responsibility in terms of securing operations, securing their production systems, securing data, and government's got to lead by example there. Not always is it the case that government actually puts their best foot forward in some of these areas. They absolutely want to, but as an example here in the UK, we've had our National Health Service attacked several times with different bouts of ransomware, causing great disruption to our very centralized health service here in the UK. So there's an element of kind of government leading, educating, and then big organizations, these important organizations, taking their responsibility seriously and waking up and doing more in terms of securing their information, their security posture is what we call it. So becoming more aware of their own needs, but also up and down these supply chains. A chain is only as strong as its weakest link. And so it's really important that all actors in these long, interconnected and now increasingly global supply chains take information security seriously.
Well, listen, I think there's a lot that we've learned from this conversation. And I know for our listeners, they would love to learn more about this. So we just have about 30 seconds left. Is there a place where that they can go to follow stories along these lines or follow your work in this space?
Thank you. So Agrimetrics is an organization in the UK that stewards data on behalf of others. We have a data marketplace. So whilst we ourselves are not cybersecurity experts, I don't have a credential for that. I'm a practitioner who has a deep interest and kind of layperson's expertise in this area because trusted information sharing is so important to us. We refer to our security risk consultants, risk crew, a lot. And organizations like that will have blogs, will have information that that any of your listeners can go to and really understand how they should mitigate a lot of these risks in their own operations.
Well, listen, Benjamin, thank you so much for joining us today on the feed and breaking this down for us. And we would love to have you back on the show. Thanks for being here.
We'd love to do it. Thanks so much for having me on.
Up next, speaking of innovative tech, how to save gas on your next road trip.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167. Aptastic.
Welcome back to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. This week's Aptastic segment is powered by Ecobee. Ecobee just launched their best thermostats yet, including a beautiful new design inside and out. The all-new Smart Thermostat Premium and Smart Thermostat Enhanced includes a refreshed user interface and Ecobee's most advanced sensor technology to date with radar. Plus, Smart Thermostat Premium is the only smart thermostat with both an indoor air quality monitor and a smart speaker with your choice of Alexa or Siri, all encased in a stunning metal body. If you're looking to save up to 20% on your annual heating and cooling costs, head on over to Ecobee's website to invest in your comfort, home health, and security needs. Ecobee's products are built to last in your home, not in a landfill, and the software is upgradable, so you'll always get the newest features and updates on their latest devices. Okay, so speaking of Aptastic, let's take a look at some new and trending apps. And Michael, since we have been talking about saving energy, I wanted to mention an app that I just featured on the Marilyn Dennis Show, and it's called Gas Buddy. This is one of the most popular apps in the world, especially now. And I was kind of blown away to see that using that app, the people who have downloaded it have saved on average, in total, $990 million. So that's the savings that the app has offered to all of its users. Again, not individually, you're not going to save that much money. But you can see across the board, it's pretty significant.
Yeah, no, it's definitely something that a lot of people all over the world is feeling. And that's the escalating prices at the gas pump. So apps like this, I think, are going to definitely gain in popularity for sure. It's actually really interesting. My dad has one that basically geographically shows you all of the gas stations in the area and almost in real time. It's pretty accurate of how much they're charging. And so he, you know, and they also know by week on average, and they have all this analytics so that can actually pinpoint the best day and roughly time to go to the place where you're going to get at the cheapest price. So I think these apps are really important, especially now when just everything is growing in expense exponentially.
Absolutely. And I will say with Gas Buddy, that's exactly what it does. It will help to determine the cheapest places to buy gas nearby, and you can get a sense of some of the deals in your neighborhood. So super, super helpful. It's free. Again, it's been used by millions and millions of people. So it's one of those apps that is kind of a must-have on your phone.
Well, we definitely like must-haves on our phone. Now, this next app, Yubo, is a social platform where you can find new friends through live streaming and authentic interactions. And why I wanted to bring this one up was that they've actually just launched a new feature basically, and I think it's the first big social media platform to adopt this. It's a new age verification technique that uses live image capture technology to identify minors using its app in order to keep them separate from the adult users. So this is really interesting because obviously we've talked on the show many, many times on what, you know, is the appropriate age for kids to use social media. And, you know, I know a lot of friends who let their kids on before the age, like for Instagram, for example, and they monitor them and all those kinds of things. But, you know, it's good to see that, you know, platforms are trying at least their best efforts to ensure that users are identified, and then obviously security measures are put in place around those specific users as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's great just to read on their website, again, the app's called Yubo, that they really have built it around safety. So you hear the term, obviously, we've mentioned it on the show before, privacy by design. This is kind of safety by design. And they have a very strict age minimum of 13, which is pretty standard. And one of the things I love that they say is that they actually have human moderators who are enforcing some of the rules on the platform. I think that's so important. You know, great, you know, machine learning, AI can do a lot in terms of content moderation, but there are things it just can't always pick up. So it's good to employ humans and have them part of the solution. So take a note, Meta.
Take a note. Well, and this platform is really neat because it is all about real social, really being social. So through live chat, the online community is how you're making connections. And that's what I like about this, because obviously social media, I do, and we talk about this all the time, and I know everyone makes fun of me, but I just don't understand. Social media platforms are supposed to keep you connected, yet they do the complete opposite and keep us so not connected. And so people aren't talking to each other and actually having real interactions. So I love this, that this has got this live chat component. And they've also got these great these great security measures to try and ensure that they're protecting the younger users.
Absolutely. Okay, so just quickly, we have one more app to talk about. It's called Memrise, and this is an app that will help people who want to learn different languages. So it looks like they've helped 60 million people, some pretty big numbers, and it looks like a very, very fun app in terms of teaching you kind of in real life how to pronounce certain words and really get a better sense of a language if you plan to travel or you just want to kind of learn on the go.
Yeah, and it's great because it's got the lessons are really short. So those people that are like, I don't really want to do class, and it brings me back to those scary times when we were in school. So it's got nice short lessons, and they are teaching you real life phrases. So it is phrases that you will use in everyday conversation for whichever language that you're interested in learning. And I think that's the biggest thing when it comes to language learning. You know, you really do. Most people that I know want to learn conversational, whichever language it is. And so I like that. And then the idea behind these like short little lessons is to try and get you speaking the language and understanding the language faster as well.
Yes, it's very, very cool. So just a recap, we talked about Ecobee off the top in terms of a smart thermostat. They also have an app that works alongside this smart thermostat. We talked about Gas Buddy. We talked about Yubo. And we also talked about Memrise. That's Memrise. So lots of cool apps that can help you if you're just hanging around or on the go or doing some travel as well.
And of course, if you've got an app, gadget, or product you think we should check out, tweet us at AmberMac and at AmBancroft80. And of course, use the hashtag TheFeed. Coming up, we learn about the future of travel. No planes allowed.
The Feed with Amber Mac and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167. Power Friend.
Welcome to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Joining us now is Jocelyn Timperley, who just wrote an article for BBC Future. The title of the article is "What Would a Flying Free World Look Like?" So this is exciting to think about the future in this context. And Jocelyn, wanted to thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks very much. Good to be here.
All right. So we know from reading the article and just from all of the stories we've covered over the past few years that air travel can be incredibly polluting. So let's really start there and talk about the problem before we get into imagining a different future.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, basically, as probably your listeners know, flying is one of the most, pretty much the most polluting thing most people ever do. If you get on a flight, that's kind of, you know, super high carbon intensive time. The emissions from flying are small in kind of global emissions terms, but are growing rapidly. At least they were before the pandemic, and they look like they're going to go back that way. It's quite a problem climate-wise, a kind of small but significant problem, especially because it's caused by a small number of people globally. Most people don't fly.
So that was probably the most interesting fact that I found from the article itself. And I never really thought about that. And I think a lot of listeners probably don't either. You don't really think about just the actual number of people who fly and that it is much smaller than we think. And those people regularly fly. So putting it into context, it's one thing to identify that it is a huge problem for the environment, but it's another to think about how do you replace that ability to travel such distances, so efficiently and effectively for those few.
It's easy to kind of, I suppose, think of flying as like kind of an essential emissions, but it really isn't luxury emissions in the fact that it's, you know, most of the flights that are taken are not, you know, for survival. Everyone needs to eat, everyone needs to clothe themselves, everyone needs to have a house, but we don't all need to fly. So I think that's kind of a bit the premise of where the article started off from. But there are, you know, I think especially in the US where there's very limited public transport across the country, it might feel like there's really no alternative. Whereas I think in Europe and in China and other places, there are these alternatives, which are planes basically. It's easier to envision a different future because there is already significant infrastructure there.
So when we think about what a flying free world would look like, I mean, just looking at the article, there is a train, it looks like a high speed train on the cover photo. And many of us love train travel, but I think you're exactly right. Unless you're in Europe or China, in other parts of the world like Canada or the US, it really isn't necessarily a viable option. So what do you think the future could look like? And is there any hope in kind of getting there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it brings you up very strongly against the kind of personal versus structural change. Like if there's no trains to take and you need to get somewhere and the only way is to fly, you could also take, I suppose, road transport, but that takes a long time if you're going a long distance. So it does definitely confront you of like this needs to be a government, you know, policy or implemented by governments. It can't, you know, we can't just make us between ourselves. I think that's really one of the takeaways from the article, actually, that we need to invest in this on a major scale. I mean, train infrastructure is also carbon intensive to build. That's one of the reasons why we fly so much, because you need airports on either side, but you don't need any infrastructure in between. So that's why they're quite easy to make in comparative terms. So especially high speed rail is really expensive. One of the studies I cite in the article was looking at kind of where in the US high-speed rail could potentially be built with, where, you know, basically between population centers, where there's enough people that would take it to make it worth building that infrastructure. And I think they found about a quarter of flights could be replaced by that.
And so speaking of infrastructure, what about when it comes to things like freight? Because, that's another thing that's, mm-hmm. Carted around the world via airplanes. Would the solution be more infrastructure, more investments with regards to, say, moving this by sea in a faster way?
I mean, the vast, vast majority of freight around the world already goes by sea and by truck. So it's just some of the specific things that are sent speedily around the world by plane. So some things like fresh fruit, I think like mail, often, you know, is often sent by air, flowers, things like this that really need to get somewhere rapidly. Fresh fish is another one. I think one of the biggest exports going out of Heathrow Airport in London is actually fresh fish. So all those things are, you know, they're nice to have, but, you know, you can also package them and you could have frozen fish instead, which could be sent by ship. I think that ultimately, you know, actually freight is a fairly small proportion of flights. So it's not the major problem, but it does make those sort of foods really carbon intensive. I would say, like, ultimately, hopefully we will develop planes that will, you know, will be low carbon, that could take those things, but we're just so far from being there that we're not even close to those things being low carbon.
I also think it requires a shift in mindset. And what I mean by that, just looking at your article, 90% of business travel emissions currently come from aviation. And I know, living here in Toronto, there are places where you can take the train and it's reliable and it's comfortable. But so often in the business world, and this happens to me on a regular basis, they will say, okay, we're going to book your flight, you know, and it's a flight that's like 35 minutes that I could easily take a train to that destination. And so there has to be, I would think, you know, just one last question for you, kind of a shift in our mindset where we don't just kind of default to plane travel.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think some businesses, some sort of environmentally conscious businesses are beginning to think like that and to look at alternatives, especially when sometimes it's even shorter to go by train when you take into account the fact that you've got to go out, you know, an airport outside the city versus going from the city center to city center by train. Another thing that businesses can do is also like give paid time for people to travel. You know, some people are happy to travel long distances on trains. But if you end up, you know, having to use your holidays for that, I've had to do that before, to get to the climate conferences in Poland and things. And it's, you know, if businesses would give paid time when you can do some work on the train sometimes anyway, that would be a long way towards supporting people to do that. But it does need to be implemented by businesses and have this structural mindset change.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we wanted to thank you again for joining us. We loved reading your work that has been part of this great article that we just shared from BBC Future. So thank you so much for joining us on the feed.
Thanks so much. It was an interesting exercise to do.
Up next, we chat with the founder and CEO of Ecobee.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Techstar.
Welcome back to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. I am so excited for our next guest. Stuart Lombard is joining us. He is the CEO and founder of Ecobee. Stuart, welcome to The Feed.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, so for people who are not familiar with Ecobee, can you tell us a little bit about the business and how it got started?
Sure. So we make connected home products that help make your home comfortable, to give you peace of mind, to make your home resilient, and to make it efficient. And we're best known for our smart thermostats, which help you save energy, but also save money and reduce your environmental footprint. And we started the business really with a simple idea and an insight. And it was, how could we help people, you know, reduce their environmental impact and save money? And the insight we had was that heating and cooling is such a big part of your home's energy use, typically 40 to 60% of your home's energy use. And so better managing your heating and cooling is actually one of the best things that you can do. It's very inexpensive, and it has massive impact.
So you have recently just launched a new line of smart thermostats. I would love to just hear more about them and some of the features that are the most innovative that I know our audience will love.
Yeah, so we're really excited about our new thermostats that we've launched. We've launched two new thermostats. They're our most technically advanced thermostats ever. But more than just being technically advanced, we've really leaned into the design. Your home is a beautiful place. And so we've really tried to make a product that is worthy of a place in your home. It has a absolutely stunning industrial design. The glass has waterfall edges. It's got a steel body that is absolutely beautiful. The screen is twice as large. It's about twice as large as the previous one. And it has twice the resolution. So it's incredibly vibrant. And we've used used really cinematic animations to really make that user experience come to life. In order to achieve that great design, we also made some significant improvements. So we're using technology like radar, for example, for occupancy sensing. And we've added an indoor quality sensor because as our homes get more efficient, indoor air quality is becoming more and more of an issue. And so from a health perspective, for the health of your family, understanding the quality of the air inside your home is important. And that's a new feature that we put into this product. We also have the first thermostat with Siri integrated into the product, Siri inside. So you can use your thermostat like a smart speaker and you can say, hey, Siri, you know, what's the score in the Blue Jays game as an example? And you'll get your answer, which is really awesome. And then it is a smart home hub. So it has a whole bunch of radios in it. That allow you to connect a variety of different sensors. We have these room sensors that you can put in different rooms in your house. They measure temperature and occupancy and help us make it comfortable in the rooms that you actually use. And then if you leave your house, for example, we'll automatically turn down your heating and cooling equipment so you can save some money. And they also double as part of your home security system. So you kind of get a home security system for free, which is a really great feature.
So I want to dig into the cost savings, because that is probably the number one question I get asked when I talk about smart thermostats. But I also wanted to mention that I was reading an article recently on The Verge, and they said, and this is their headline, Ecobee's new thermostats are its best yet. And they say that both of these models add style to Ecobee's substance. What do you think they mean by that? I mean, it's a great review, but clearly your reputation in the industry continues to really thrive.
Yeah, we've had some really great responses, which is, you know, phenomenal to see. We've really focused on leaning into energy savings. I mean, it's the reason we started the company in the first place. We have a whole team of data scientists who are focused on just like, how do we tweak and tune the algorithms? And one of the great things about our product is that it's software upgradable. So as we make these improvements, all of our customers get these improvements. And if you bought a thermostat in 2015, for example, you would get all the improvements to our algorithms that we've made over time. We estimate our average customer saves about 26% on their heating and cooling costs. And so it's a significant amount on your heating and cooling costs. And then if you're in a place like Ontario where we have time of use rates, you can save even more because, you know, by understanding weather, by understanding how your home performs, and by understanding electricity rates, you know, we'll tune your heating and cooling system to save you money without impacting your comfort.
And just to pick up a little bit on the cost savings, as you mentioned, I mean, it's not just about the money you will save potentially on bills, but it's also about saving energy as well. Can you talk about what an average Canadian home could potentially save?
Typically, you know, we estimate most of our customers save somewhere between $150 to $250 per year. And so it's really a product that will, you know, pay for itself. And not only will it pay for itself, it'll keep paying in future years. You know, one of the really exciting things, you know, we talk about the massive impact is collectively, we estimate our customers have saved enough energy to take the city of Los Angeles off the grid for a year. And that's really the massive impact that, you know, when we work together, we can have. And so it's really exciting. And to be part of that and to help our customers, you know, be more energy efficient in this time of, you know, climate change is really exciting.
So aside from the article that I just quoted to you from The Verge, I'm curious, just I know it's still early days, but what has been the feedback so far from people who've had a chance to test out these smart thermostats?
It's been phenomenal. And it's just been really great. I love, one of my favorite things about being the CEO of the company is that people send me emails and letters about their experiences with our products. And, you know, the response has been phenomenal from our customers. You know, they love the new design. I think, you know, maybe to the point that the Verge said in the article, you know, if there was a knock against Ecobee, maybe historically it was that, you know, some people didn't appreciate the previous industrial design. And I think we really, you know, made another step up with this product. And so people, you know, love it. It's going to look beautiful in your home. And so, you know, it's just been really rewarding to spend so much time. And I know how much time and effort and the details that the team focuses on to deliver a great experience. And so it's great to see the great reviews that we've been getting.
Now, we had a chance to do a Facebook Live together recently, which I enjoyed. We got pretty geeky on that video, if anybody wants to check it out on my Facebook page. But I also wanted to say, just before we let you go, that Ecobee isn't just about smart thermostats. Can you talk a little bit about the brand in broader terms?
Sure. So, you know, as I said, I think there's, you know, connected home is a very broad category, and our goal is to focus on, you know, comfort, peace of mind, resiliency, and efficiency. And so all of those things go together. And one of the things that we've always put into our products is this concept of it being a hub. And so if you opened up one of our thermostats, it would look much more like the inside of your smartphone. It's got a quad core 1.5 gigahertz CPU. It's got 500 megs of RAM and 2 gigs of flash. It is like your smartphone, and we pack it with sensors. And once we do that, that allows us to understand context and what's happening in your home and help you make better decisions, because things like home security and home energy are tightly correlated, right? We want to know when you leave so we can turn down your heating and cooling system. Well, one of the ways to do that is to have these occupancy sensors around your house. And so you can just walk out of your house and we automatically know that you've left, and we automatically arm your alarm system, turn down your heating and cooling equipment. And that context of understanding whether you're, you know, home and awake, home and asleep, or away allows us to make significantly better choices for you about how to save energy automatically. And so it just makes the whole experience effortless, and allows us to create significantly more value without having to buy a whole new system, a whole new security system with like a keypad and a bunch of other things. All of those things can be integrated into that thermostat, which is the hub. You add a few extra sensors, and now it can not only make you more comfortable, it can give you significantly better peace of mind, and it can save you a lot more energy.
And I said that that was the last question, but I do have to ask a quick follow-up on the topic of smart thermostats. And this will help me to avoid sending people many, many links to the compatibility tool that you have on your website. So if people are curious with these new smart thermostats, if they are compatible with their heating or cooling system, where's the best place for them to go?
Best place to go is to www.ecobee.com/compatibility. And if you take your existing thermostat, pop it off the wall, you'll see the wires. You just enter the wires that you have on your existing thermostat, put it into that URL, and we'll tell you whether you're compatible or not.
Well, listen, Stuart, thank you so much for joining us today on the feed.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Socially Speaking.
It's time now for Socially Speaking, and this week we are going to talk about social media. In particular, we're going to talk about Meta, the parent company to Facebook, WhatsApp, Instagram, and TikTok. So the Meta TikTok war continues, and most recently, Bloomberg published an article where they talked about the fact that very often Mark Zuckerberg is trying to catch up to TikTok. And so what you're seeing on Instagram is Instagram Reels, which have been around for a while. It's short form video content. And basically what they want at Facebook is for everybody to be posting these original videos. But what ends up happening on Facebook, and this is what is on my feed, is people just create TikTok videos and then post them directly to Facebook. And apparently, according to the article, and Michael, maybe I'll start with you because I know you had a chance to kind of look into how this one influencer was contacted by Meta, that the company is trying to reach out directly to influencers.
Yeah, this is incredible, actually, because you think about how frustrating it is when you try to sort out something as simple as logging in or out of your account or changing the settings, and you never get a person, and it's usually a bot on your Facebook account. And I only say that because I am currently staying in a retirement village, and I can hear all these people talking about Facebook and how frustrated they are. And so that's a whole nother conversation. But in this particular instance, an influencer was reached out to by an actual person to basically convince them to not post to TikTok and just post their content to Reels, which is incredible when you think about it. And to me, that kind of almost just indirectly you know, says, oh, we know our platform isn't great, please. Like, it's almost like they're begging people that have some kind of influence and following online to try and get them to just use one platform, which of course doesn't work if you're a content creator.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I think also people have made TikTok part of their everyday. And so they are figuring out ways to share TikTok videos, and the platform is a pretty seamless platform for creating and sharing. Aaron, what's your kind of, I don't want to call it workflow, but what's kind of your social flow in terms of watching Reels or TikTok? Are you into either? Do you hate both?
I like how you immediately bring up, do I hate both? Because I get told a lot that I hate a lot of things, even though I find... I like a lot of things. I like Star Wars. I like whatever, pizza. Anyways, I have TikTok on my phone. My son has tried to get me to use it. I don't use it. I can't handle it. I don't touch it. I don't use it. But I've heard from people that use it a lot.
Why don't you? Why don't you use it? What is it specifically that you don't like about TikTok?
I don't like, I always have to ask my son. So when I'm on my suggested feed or the FYP, the For You page, how do I mark something as uninterested or go again? I don't even know what they call it. And I don't want certain things shown in my suggested feed so I can tailor it better, but I don't know how to do it. And then I prefer going to a feed of things I follow rather than a For You page. That's how I look at Twitter. That's
like
how I look at Instagram.
Well, so be it. Sounds like an old people's way.
you're ageist, but so be it. But I do look at the Reels. In one thing that Instagram has gotten right for the most part is suggested Reels, because since I've become a cat dad with two cats, I look at more and more cat content on Instagram. So the suggested Reels halfway down my page are always crazy cat content, which is good. And then I share it, and then my wife shares it, and so on and so forth. That's good. But the one thing they don't do well is suggested accounts in the middle of my feed. Oh, you like this cat account? You like this one? No, I don't. Or do you like this food account? You might like this one. No, I don't. So suggested Reels, yes. Suggested photo accounts, no. So kind of in between. But I think they're trying to straddle that line too of not just what is the content? Is it static photos versus videos? Is it the For You page? Or is it the following account, the accounts people follow? And I'm still in the camp of accounts I follow.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good point. I also have TikTok on my phone, and I often get my son to send me TikToks that he loves, and there are tons of great TikToks. I've also done Reels, and probably will end up doing Reels now and again. But part of my issue with all of it is just, I think I prefer in some cases longer form content, right? And I hate to say that's probably an age thing, but I like podcasts. I like more in-depth interviews. I'm not looking for this kind of quick social media fix. And that's what it feels like when I'm jumping into this content. Although, Michael, I hear you've had some success with Reels.
Honestly, it's and this goes to show how ridiculous this whole thing is. So I posted the most ridiculous, like useless video, means nothing. It got over 12,000 views in a day or so. And it's ridiculous. It was, I recorded my sister's dashboard, the type of car she has. I'd never seen this, and I don't know why. I just thought this was hilarious, and I just started giggling. So it's just me giggling like a 12-year-old girl as I record the dashboard moving sideways to show something behind it, because obviously there wasn't enough room in the dashboard. And so all it is this part of the car moving to one side to show something else, and I'm giggling. 12,000 views. Honestly. And then there's a reel next to that, which I think is hilarious. And it's me stopping on skis. And someone says, Michael, you know, how are you going skiing or whatever? And then I just fall down. That's funny. And no views, like 100 views of me falling down on skis. I mean, anyways, what I do want to say about TikTok is that I like TikTok. I like the brand. I think that it has a much more positive feel in the marketplace than Meta and Instagram and WhatsApp. And what I do like about it is that their algorithms really are focused on introducing you to new people and different things that is actually entertaining rather than just giving you everything of the same. And this effectively then, you know, opens you up to not necessarily big stars, but up and coming content creators. And so I think TikTok's got that done well. And I think that other social platforms should follow suit. So that's what I like about that. They've got their algorithm or algorithmic magic. They've got it spot on.
Yeah, they absolutely do. And I think it's really fascinating too, is I think what I find fascinating is that Meta really tries to kind of manipulate people's behavior, right? Where social media,
yes,
if you remember,
good word, manipulate, right? People's behavior, 100%.
In the early days, it was really about letting people create and people would follow them and just see their stuff in chronological order. So Aaron, do you think we've kind of lost the point of social media?
I don't think so. I mean, I know that some people didn't know that Twitter was available in chronological, not algorithmic, and there's a toggle button. I didn't know that was news to people. I've been chronological on Twitter for so long, and I also find it easy to deselect accounts and mute accounts and block accounts. I like having that control and don't like things fed to me, and then as so much like on the TikTok FYP, and then making me figure out how to deselect things and not show them again. So I don't know. There's still control out there if you know how to control it, but some platforms make it easier to control than others.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. And you know what I find sometimes that some of those features where you do want to see things in chronological order, or you do want to, you know, just select the friends who you would like to view their content first, some of those features are hidden. They certainly don't make it easy for everybody. And again, I think it is about this kind of control of what people are doing and how people are doing it. And the interesting thing about algorithms is that on TikTok, I've heard people say they like the algorithms because they kind of learn what they like and they're very accurate. Yeah. Whereas I'm not sure any of the other platforms have been able to nail it. I know we do have to wrap, so let us know what you think. You can find us online at Amber Mack and at mbancroft80. Aaron, if the algorithm can find you, where would you be on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter at my name, Aaron Papernick, Aaron with 1A. You can send me cat reels on Instagram at paperboy416.
And don't worry, everybody listening, the content creator joined Reels, earned $150, and is now using that money to buy Starbucks and drinks for her friends. So she's doing okay. Now, of course, this is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B on SiriusXM Canada Talks, Channel 167.